Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It's hoped next month's eclipse will help reveal some of the secrets of the universe. Scientists will be watching the short but total solar eclipse to see what they can learn. They'll be among millions of curious Americans who will put themselves in position to watch the celestial event on August 21st. Among them will be former astronaut Dr. Janet Cavandi. Janet Cavandi is a Missouri native and director of NASA's Glenn Research Center in Cleveland. It designs and develops technology for NASA missions. She'll be in Jefferson City for the event and is with us now by phone from Cleveland. Dr. Cavandi, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Can you give us some sense, if you would, of NASA's overall involvement on the 21st?
Oh, it's going to be quite a large event for the agency. We have people positioned across the country at different locations where most of the total eclipse viewings will be, and plan to have live broadcasts on NASA television.
You'll be involved in Jefferson City in one of those broadcasts, correct?
That's correct. Jefferson City and my home state there in Missouri.
You're a Carthage, Missouri girl, right?
That's right.
Right. Well, what if it's cloudy?
If it's cloudy, you probably won't get to see anything. There'll be a lot of disappointed people.
Boy, there surely will be.
But
you'll
be
getting
dark, but we won't get to see the actual eclipse.
Yeah. Well, that would be a shame, and we all have our fingers crossed. One of the things I learned getting ready for this this program is that apparently NASA's going to have some jet planes up in the air that will able to watch this event for several more minutes than the rest of us.
Yeah, but there should be several planes in the air. Of course, there will be a lot of commercial aircraft in the air as well, so those folks will get quite a treat and a really unique view. Both, and if they are in a window seat, then of course they'll be able to see the eclipse. They will need to be careful, viewing, the sun. You don't want to ever look directly at the sun, but they would not only get to see the eclipse, but they would also get to see the shadow that the moon will cast on the ground.
That's a view that not many people get a chance to see.
Exactly.
What about the folks in the space station?
The folks on the space station, assuming that it's in a position where they can actually see the eclipse, I have not checked on the actual positioning of where the ISS will be that day, but assuming that it is there at that time, they will get to see a really unique view as well from a higher perspective, and they should be able to see this dark circle with a shadow around it pass the entire width of the United States. So starting from Oregon and then passing across the central part of the United States and then passing off the eastern shore.
Is there any advantage for having these different perspectives from the jet planes, for instance, and even from other parts of the country? Will it look different to different people depending on where they are?
Well, the obvious things will be, depending on your altitude above the Earth, you're going to see a different size black hole, and from space it will be smaller looking, but you get a much bigger, broader God's eye view of the Earth from up there, right? So you get to see a much larger portion of the Earth as this black circle passes across the continent. If you're lower in the atmosphere, maybe only a couple thousand, 3,000, 4,000 feet up in a private aircraft, then you could actually be inside the shadow itself or pass through the shadow of the moon on the Earth and, sort of go from daylight to darkness and back into daylight if you were able to time it just right. So, yeah, and then from the ground, of course, all you'll see is a big, dark shadow approaching. If you're looking up at the sun, you will see, through protective lenses, you will see the sun, and then you'll see a portion of the sun start to disappear, and then it will look sort of like a crescent moon as the moon passes in front of the sun until we get, in that particular location, a total blockage of the sun. And it will be completely, essentially dark, almost just like nighttime during the full eclipse portion. And then as the moon passes by and then the sun on the other side starts to shine again, you will gradually come back into daylight.
All of this happening in a little more than 2.5 minutes, almost 3 minutes.
Right, yeah. That's pretty quick.
It really is. Would you rather be airborne to watch this event than on the ground?
Oh, gosh, that's so tempting. I don't know. I don't know. I have never been in space during a full eclipse, so I don't have that perspective. And I've never been in an airplane. And I've actually never seen a full eclipse. I've always been in positions where I've been able to see partial eclipses. So it's a real treat for me just to be on the ground and viewing from the ground. At some point in time, maybe I will be lucky enough to be in the air and see it from that perspective as well.
What kinds of things are there still to learn for scientists from these eclipses?
I think there's probably an endless list of things that scientists would like to learn every time they have the opportunity. One of the most obvious things that scientists look at, it's a rare occasion that you get to see the corona of the sun. The corona is the upper atmosphere of the sun. It's very hot. And when the sun itself is blocking the hot center part, or, you know, when that portion of the sun is blocked, then you can see the surrounding corona, which is really impressive, a view of the hot plasma, the gases, the ionized gases that are above the atmosphere. So that's one of their only chances that they get to have a really nice view of that phenomenon. And then, you know, they are able to then, at that particular point of total eclipse, it adds to the database. Imperfect, you know, to, I think, even milliseconds, to very fine timing the exact rotation and revolution of the moon around the Earth. Because for, you know, many, 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 many thousands of years, the Earth has been, or the moon has been going around the Earth, but the timing of it, the exact shape of that, that movement of the moon around the Earth it's refined each time we get a measurement like this. So that's another area. Biologists are always interested in things that they learn about wildlife. It's maybe not something that's new, but it's always interesting to observe animal life, birds going to roost, and you know, spiders doing different things with their webs, you know, that they do at night and not in the daytime. Those animals are a little confused. They start preparing for nighttime early. The flowers start to close up. Things like that happen during a total eclipse as well. So if you have the opportunity to observe some of nature during this event, that might be also something interesting.
What are the kinds of things that we could learn from studying that corona and the gases that are visible?
Well, I think it's just, and I'm not a heliophysicist, so it's someone who studies the physics of the sun. I'm not a scientist in that area, but I believe it's their opportunity to watch how the temperature changes, and you know, the temperature changes in the corona, and how it's influenced by the magnetosphere, and how it pushes out the ionized particles away from the sun's surface.
It's certainly a beautiful sight. I've never seen one, but there are plenty of pictures out there that show a stunning visual, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. The kind of instrumentation that is used in looking at these things, what kind of equipment is out there to study this eclipse?
Well, again, that's not my area of expertise, but I know that there are specialized cameras that are not damaged by, you know, looking into the sun's center portion of the intensity of that light. So I know that there are scientists that have these specialized imagery devices that they can block certain parts of the sun that they get these good visual effects. You might not be able to get the best pictures from your common, you know, everyday a camera or phone, and you probably don't even want to be looking through a lens of a camera at the sun. That's also not protective to your eyes. So I would probably leave that to the experts, because they know how to protect themselves from the sun's rays. Even if you're wearing sunglasses, that's still not enough to protect your eyes from the sun.
You can't mention that often enough. You can do serious damage to yourself, obviously, if you don't follow
it. I'm probably repeating myself, but it is a very important thing to note.
And you're not the only one. I think every story you see about the eclipse carries that particular kind of warning. NASA has a website that is devoted to this event, does it not?
Yes, I believe so. I would have to look it up to give it to you, but NASA has quite a bit out there on the web about the solar eclipse.
Thinking in terms, I have it right here.
I can give it to you. It's eclipse2017.nasa.gov.
All righty. We'll put a link to that on our website at stlpublicradio.org.
Okay.
Would NASA learn anything or hope to learn anything from an event like this that would be useful in space travel, space exploration?
Well, I think that just information we gather from studying the sun provides and adds to the database of the assumptions we make about other stars, both in our galaxy and others, the age of the star, how long we've had it around in the solar system, how much longer we anticipate it will continue to burn. It helps predict not only the age of our own sun, but that information then helps us predict the ages of the other stars in our vicinity and in other parts of the galaxy. So it just all adds to our understanding of the solar system, the way the planets were formed potentially, the revolution of the planets around the sun, and how other solar systems elsewhere in the galaxy may have formed, and you know the ages of those galaxies as well. Every time we get more information from any part of our galaxy and our solar system, it adds to our overall knowledge of the way the universe was formed.
That's an awful lot of information to glean from just a couple of minutes of observation.
Well, yeah. So it's not just this one observation,
sure.
But we've been doing this for considerable numbers of years, and we've had people that travel around the planet. And it's not all, you know, not just that each eclipse provides that information, but in totality, all of the data that we gather from our observations of the solar system. We put all the puzzle pieces together to kind of form the bigger picture. In addition, we study the radiation that comes off of the sun, the way the mass ejections happen out of the corona. You might happen to catch one of those if you're lucky during an eclipse and see that even better. But we know that the radiation has an impact on humans. It has an impact on the Earth, communications. It has an impact on the astronauts that are above the atmosphere that don't receive any protection from the atmosphere, so that we know that radiation is harmful to humans. People traveling from here to the moon or Mars would be exposed to that radiation for long periods of time. So that adds to another type of database that we use for space exploration.
I want to pick up on a couple of those points, Dr. Cavandi, but I have to take a break. We're talking with Dr. Janet Cavandi. She's a native Missourian, by the way, former astronaut and director of NASA's Glenn Research Center in Cleveland. Obviously, we're talking about the forthcoming eclipse, which will be on the 21st of August. Back to continue our conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with NASA's Dr. Janet Cavandi. Dr. Cavandi, I finished a book recently on the 1878 total solar eclipse, which included large parts of this country. And one of the things scientists then were interested in during the time of the eclipse was seeing if they could see and discover other planets, given the special situation that developed as a result of this darkness and what have you. Do you think that that's something that is still on the minds of science, to find other planets during this eclipse?
You know, it might be a possibility. I think could probably safely say that we found all of the planets that we would consider a planet in our solar system by now, given the quality of the telescopes that we have. However, we might be able to find previously unknown other objects like asteroids or things like that that are out there that are, you know, pretty considerable size, but maybe weren't in a position to be viewed because of the brightness of the sun that kind of blocks the ability to see them. That might be something that they're still looking at. I haven't heard that for sure, but I wouldn't believe that would be out of the realm of possibility.
You know, you spoke earlier about the gathering of data, and one thing I've read recently is because of the route that the shadow takes over the United States, there's going to be a tremendous number of trackers, and that it's very, very important to have those trackers in one country to follow this thing. Does that make sense to you?
Well, yeah, I think in this particular case, because the United States in this eclipse is the only country that will receive a full total eclipse this time around. So I'm sure we'll have a lot of Native American, you know, people that are born and raised in the United States are going to have the special interest of seeing the eclipse that runs the entire width of the United States this time around. So I'm sure we'll have many, many scientists placed all along the route, and, of course, the casual observer, because it is a rare event to be able to observe. Like I said, I've never seen it, a full eclipse, so it's quite a treat to be able to have that opportunity. And I'm sure we will be hosting many, many international scientists as well.
Yeah, clearly there's a great deal of excitement, certainly in the scientific community, but also in the civilian community. I mean, millions of people are going to be on the move to put themselves in a position to see this thing. And
right.
You've been reading about that. Thousands and thousands of people will converge on specific places.
Right.
Why Jefferson City for you?
Well, in part because it is my home state, and we just thought it would be a nice opportunity for someone from the state to come back and host part of the NASA show from the Show Me State there in the Capitol. It just so happens that it passes through the Capitol there in Jefferson City, so that's why that venue was chosen.
Well, what kind of a broadcast is this actually going to be?
Well, I think NASA's going to be planning to have broadcasts throughout the day. And as the eclipse moves across the United States, we'll have people positioned in different locations. And as we move across, we'll probably go from one venue to the next. And whenever we approach Jefferson City, then I will have my time in the spotlight there and be able to describe the scene that we're viewing there in the great state of Missouri.
Will you have other people with you to kind of help out, if you will?
We will. We have a NASA team that will be there with me, and a solar scientist will be there as well, who can help answer questions about the sun itself. And so we will, like I said, be live on NASA television during that broadcast, and I think we'll be cutting in from one location to the next throughout the day.
How many locations do you have, do you know?
You know, I couldn't tell you the total number of locations that we have people set up, maybe six or seven throughout the U.S. that day.
I know there's going to be a group in the football field at SIU in Carbondale in Illinois, and they're expecting, I think, as many as 100,000 people to show up there.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be quite the crowd. It'll be neat just to see that many people congregated to view such an unusual sight. I mean, you know, if you are in Jefferson City and you see the full eclipse, it probably won't happen again in Jefferson City for another 1,000 years. So it's very rare to have a full eclipse in one place on the earth, you know, for a long period of time until the next event. So it's really a unique opportunity.
You'd better get there early to find a parking place. That's all I can say.
That's what I hear. So yeah. I'm thinking I may need to change my flight to an earlier time just to ensure that I get there in time.
NASA also has a traveling exhibit, from what I understand, Journey to Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about that, and will that be in Missouri?
Yes, that's a traveling, it's a large bus, and type of a trailer that we'll take with us, and that should be there as well.
And what's included in that?
Oh, we have some interactive activities in there for, well, probably geared toward children, but anyone of any age, the big children also enjoy seeing it. I think we'll have a moon rock that might be there as well. So, and we have people there that can answer a lot of questions about NASA's exploration program, about our aeronautics program, the research that we continue to do in aeronautics. A lot of that is done here at the Glenn Research Center in Cleveland. We do about half aerospace and half aeronautics here, so it's kind of a cool one of NASA's research centers that does both sides, both aeronautics and space. So we can be ready to answer questions about all of that.
So it's not totally dedicated to information about the eclipse. It's really a NASA.
Oh, no. Yeah. Right. Sure. We can answer questions just about almost anything that NASA does. We'll have science demonstrations and a photo booth and things like that for people to come out. Probably some giveaways as well, I'm sure, as we usually do. So it's a really nice opportunity for people to get a little bit more information about the agency as well.
How did you get into this?
Well, I have been interested in space since I can remember. I grew up there, like I mentioned, in the state, and actually was raised on a farm near Cassville, Missouri. So my parents and I would have the great opportunity to be able to view the stars at night in a very pristine situation with very little light pollution. So, you could see the Milky Way very easily and just the amazing quantity of stars that are out there that are visible to the human eye. And I think it just always captured my attention. And so growing up, I either wanted, I wanted to be the astronaut. But if I couldn't be an astronaut, I wanted to be either an astronomer or something that dealt with studying space. So I set my sights on being the astronaut, studied really hard, went to college there in the state, went to Missouri Southern in Joplin, and then I went to Rolla at the University of Missouri there, got a master's degree before going out to Washington State and getting a PhD out there. So I really just added to my credentials to the point where I was allowed an interview with the Astronaut Corps and eventually was accepted there. And was fortunate enough to be able to fly 3 missions on the space shuttle, the highlight of my career. And so I'm always going to be fond of NASA, no matter how long. I've been here for over 22 years now, and I still love it.
We only have about a minute left, but you're one of the few people, the relatively few people, who's ever had the opportunity to watch planet Earth from aloft, if you will, from up high. Can you give me in 30 or 40 seconds your impression of what you saw as you looked out those windows?
I think the very first view I had of the Earth, I floated up from the middeck and I saw the blue, the real blue of the ocean against the blackness of space with the clouds, and I thought, it looks like I'm looking at an IMAX movie, only I'm floating. And so it was just a real jaw-dropping experience to actually realize where you are, that you're actually above the planet, looking back and just seeing the beauty of it. The other really beautiful images that I keep in my mind are the thunderstorms from space, the way they look, the lightning coming up through the clouds and the moonlight on the ocean, and then the city lights on the planet below are also some incredible memories that I will always carry with me.
What a wonderful opportunity to view that. I certainly envy you that opportunity. Dr. Janet Cavanti, thank you so much for being with us. Best of luck to you on the 21st of August as you telecast from Jefferson City.
Thank you very much. We'll do our best to keep the skies clear.
Thank you. Thanks to former astronaut Janet Cavanti. Coming up, a visit to an historic Northside building getting a facelift. St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.